Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Happy New Year.
Happy folks. New Year, everyone. 2026, we made it.
We did. We made it. Made some fun resolutions. We were just talking about it. Surviving the next year was a big one for me.
Huge. Absolutely huge. Probably read at least one book this year. What do you think, Luke?
At least one, yes. Mm. I think so. Mm-hmm. At least one chapter book. For sure. Get higher on non-chapter books.
This is where the listeners realize we've not actually been reading these books. We've been having the AI summarize them so that we can comment on them. Yeah.
That's why some of our analysis is really bad. So.
Correct. That's why it's not a book club, Luke. Before we get into our new book, Luke, which is The Color of Magic.
Yes.
Terry Pratchett, Color of Magic.
That's right.
I've got a warm-up for us.
Okay.
Okay. I think this is a hot take.
Good.
You can tell me if it's not. I was in the Indian restaurant that I've talked about before on this pod, the place where I am trying to become a regular. Where they know me.
Right, where he doesn't recognize you.
Still doesn't. Still came by and asked me to leave them a review on Google, and I told him once again I had already done that. That's not the story, though. Because I'm in this place and having my meal with my delightful partner. We're having a great time. And then I hear a sound you don't often hear in a restaurant, which is a bark. We're inside. Okay. We're inside this building. Okay, this is not like an outdoor, on the street kind of a vibe. We're in a restaurant, and there's a little bark. And I was like, was that a dog? But I didn't see a dog, so I was like, maybe I just misheard something. Maybe it was on the TV or something like that. And then 5 minutes go by, and there's another bark. And I'm like, there is a dog in here. Somebody brought their dog to this restaurant. Now, service dogs, obviously, totally fine to have anywhere. They're well-trained. They're not going to be barking when you're trying to eat your onion pakora or your veg samosa or your bindi masala. They're not going to be making a ruckus, okay?
Sure. Yeah.
This dog, clearly not a service dog, okay?
Starting to make a ruckus.
I don't think a restaurant is a place for a dog. Listen, I love dogs. I have a dog. She's wonderful. I'd love to bring her a lot of places that aren't really clear dog places. But restaurant, not the one. Never. I never want to hear a dog in a restaurant. It's just not it for me.
Right. I mean, this is why a lot of restaurants will specify if they are dog friendly. And it's only ever the patio.
Correct. Right? The patio. And I always ask, like, if I'm at a restaurant, maybe I'm traveling and I've got my dog with him, like, hey, can we sit out on the patio? Is that cool? And pretty consistently, everybody's been like, yeah, that's great. Here's the thing. Here's where I think my hot take is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is up to the regulars to tell people not to bring dogs into the restaurant.
Okay, are you saying it's not the job of the restaurant owner?
I think it puts them in a weird spot.
Okay.
Because I think the owner is one thing, but maybe the owner's not there that night, right? Maybe it's just a server.
Yeah.
And this customer comes in, they're covered in jewels and diamonds, and they've got this little dog in their purse or whatever, and they don't say anything about it. I feel like if I'm a server, I'm like, I don't. This is probably their first time here. I've never seen them before. Although, who would know? How would I ever know if they were a regular or not? But they're bringing their dog in. I'm like, I don't want to rock the boat. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's a little bit of, in the service industry especially, there's a lot of accommodating that's like, this isn't great for us, but like, I can make it work, I think.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
I think there is another layer to this too, which is that it's an Indian restaurant. It's not like a McDonald's or something. Like, this is an Indian restaurant in Mississippi.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You know what I'm saying here? Yeah. Like, I'm saying that there is a lot more potential for like a bad interaction there.
Yes. Yes.
And I think it was, I was kind of feeling a little personally obligated to be like, should I go over and let them know the deal? Should I go complain to them instead of to my server that there's a dog in this restaurant?
Well, this is a very interesting one because, like, this is more of a basic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, dogs are just generally not allowed inside a restaurant.
Yeah.
So like, the idea that you would have to go up and be like, in this restaurant, dogs are not allowed, is, like, not quite right. You would have to be like, hey, just so you know, generally...
I'd have to be like, hi, do you speak English? Are you from this country? Have you been to a restaurant before? If the answer is yes to all of these questions, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Because, like, what would you say? Would you say, like, you're not supposed to have dogs in here? Because that, like, implies
yeah.
that it's this restaurant.
Yeah. Here's what I was thinking in the moment. Could I fake an allergy? Could I go up to them? Because I don't want to be the dog police necessarily, because I've tried doing that with people before in the past about other things that their stupid dogs do and they don't really take kindly to it.
Yes.
Because nobody wants to be told what to do. But
yeah.
If instead I'm like, you're making me really sick by being in here with your dog, could I play on their sympathies a little bit?
I think it's higher risk.
Mm. How so?
I guess risk is not the right word because they're not going to like ask you to prove it.
Can you imagine?
Or anything like that. They're like, let me rub my dog in your face to see if you have a reaction.
Let me see if you get hives real quick.
I don't know. It's kind of like... To me, this is one of those things that I feel like have really become more frequent, where it's like, this is just a person that can't participate in society normally.
This is a person that's who kind has of rejected an extreme reaction all because of the this rules.
This is like not the most egregious
right.
offense for sure. But I feel like we're having. Am I correct? Like, do you get this sense too, where you feel like we're having to deal with a lot more antisocial behavior?
Just in general in our lives?
Yeah.
I think it peaked during COVID times and immediately after COVID times, and we're sort of coming back down, but I do think our new set point is higher. I would agree.
I think I agree that also COVID was the big thing.
God, do you remember flights during COVID? How it could turn into like a cage match in like the drop of a hat? Insane.
The biggest one to me, and not to hijack this,
yeah,
but is people playing
music
people
on
having
the train.
Their phone on freaking loud volume
yeah.
in public transit or just in public situations in general. It's like, how can you possibly be alive?
I am gonna hijack this a little bit because this literally happened to me in the airport on the way for some of my Christmas travel. This old lady who was in her 60s was just watching TikToks full volume.
Yeah.
Her husband is sitting next to her, and I was like consistently looking over and like trying to make eye contact to be like, this is a problem. Nobody else is doing this. Do you see how nobody else is doing this?
It's insane. It's truly like I can't figure out what their brains are doing.
I think they just don't care. Like this is pure psychopath behavior. It's just they lack the brain component that feels any kind of empathy. It's just gone.
It's wild.
It's shriveled into nothing.
And the dog inside is a much less egregious,
yeah.
I'll say,
yeah.
example of it.
I agree.
Because it's like, you have to know, like, I don't know. No one had to, like, that's just kind of an instinctual knowledge thing, though, I'm realizing.
It feels like it. Like, also, other places you don't bring your dog. The barber. The hospital. Like, most places, actually. No dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my hot take here is I just feel like there needs to be, there's some kind of a responsibility to the regulars to be like, hey, that 18-year-old high school student isn't going to say this to you because they're nervous by the situation, but like, I don't have any stake in this. You're not going to give me a bad tip. So leave your dog at home, ma'am.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to do it.
I don't know if I'm going to do it either, Luke. But you
know, you're not a regular.
That's true. Maybe next time I'll offer that as a service. If they remember me, I'll be like, hey, you remember that lady with the dog? If you remember me next time, I could back you up. But you have to not ask me to leave a review.
Of acknowledging my regular status.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anyway, Luke, that's my hot take. If you're a regular at a restaurant and somebody comes in being unhinged, maybe think about stepping up a little bit. I mean, you could check in with the server and be like, is this okay? And if they're like, no, and they're looking really upset about it, then you can be like, don't worry, I got you, fam.
I love it.
You know? And I feel like it builds a little bond, too.
It certainly would catapult you into regular status.
So true. Maybe this is, you're saying I should have done this. You're saying this is my chance.
I think you should have.
And I missed it.
Because then you would have for sure been recognized the next time. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe next time I just bring my dog.
Be like, oh, you guys are dog friendly.
I didn't realize you guys were dog friendly. Very cool. Love it.
A lot of options available to you, Dan.
Always are, Luke. But anyway.
Should we get to the book?
Let's get to the book, Luke. Where did we stop?
Okay. We read about half of the book. So we're up to the chapter called The Lore of the Worm.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is The Color of Magic by Terry Pratchett. Mm-hmm. A classic. Dan.
A true
Have you
classic.
Read this before?
I've not read this before. Have you?
No, I haven't either. This was the first. I'm familiar with the concept.
Yeah.
Well, I'm familiar with the world building aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is where I want to start.
Okay.
Because that's where the book starts. So.
Oh, look at that.
A little bit. Look at that. So the description here, right, is that there's a giant turtle.
Yep.
And then on the back of the giant turtle. Actually, I think I've got the order mixed up. On the back of the giant turtle. Is the disc or
no,
is it the elephants?
Elephants.
Elephants come elephants on the back of the turtle.
Yep.
And then something else. And then the disc.
No. Disc on the elephants.
Disc on the elephant. What's the chain that gets mentioned at one point?
The chain.
There is a chain that like a few mile long chain that went up to that was like up to the land of the gods, I think.
Oh, sure. But that's like up. Above the disc.
That's up.
That's like you go up a mountain in the middle of the disc, and that's where the gods are.
Okay.
But yeah, below we got elephants, turtle. I will say there might be something under the turtle.
Okay.
I feel like now we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I just feel like this is huge. The turtle's massive.
Well, okay, so they in the intro to this, they're talking about the world.
Yeah.
And they talk about how they didn't learn about the turtle until they did this kind of like lowering of they had like a chain that they lowered some explorers down.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
But they did say that it was only a hypothesis before this.
Correct.
And I'm curious how that hypothesis could have possibly come to be. Right? Was that the leading one?
Well, no, I don't know if they said it was the leading hypothesis, but you know the like monkeys with typewriters, right?
Sure, yes.
I mean, everybody's got a hypothesis of some kind.
You think it was like, so you know how in our real life world, a lot of like surprising things happen all the time, right?
Yeah.
But someone predicts them.
Sure.
And then so many years after the fact, that person has like had some credibility. And then so you'll see a news article where it'll be like, guy that predicted this just launched his new prediction.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, I'm supposed to take that seriously because they got one crazy thing right.
Looking at you, Nate Silver.
I feel like this has got to be the case with the hypothesis of the world being a big turtle.
This is like the Nostradamus kind of guy.
Yeah. One guy was like, I bet we're all on a flying turtle.
Well, and it was definitely...
And then he was right.
It was definitely not specific enough, right? Like, there's no way he was like, we're on a disc on the back of four elephants on the back of a giant turtle. It was like, we're probably a flat disc with a turtle somewhere.
Yeah.
But everyone was like, close enough!
Emperor!
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, yeah. Gotta be. How do you feel about the fact that Terry doesn't believe in maps?
Like, you mean like maps at the beginning of the book?
Book, at the very beginning of the book, it's... I don't remember if this is in the the prologue or if it's in the foreword... But he says, no maps.
I don't think I read this.
I think it's in the foreword then. But yeah, no map. I don't think there will ever be a map. It sounds like. He's very anti-map.
Okay.
And I'm kind of down with it. Because I will say, a lot of the time, if there is a map, I'm like constantly trying to be like, where is that thing on the map? Based on other things.
I come to think of it, I have kind of flipped on maps.
Okay.
In a fantasy book.
Okay.
Long time ago, I was all in on maps.
Big map guy over here.
Big map guy. All my Redwall books had a map. Loved those. Aragon map. Loved it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, these days, whenever the book has a map, I don't look at it, like, at all.
Wow.
And I don't know when that happened. I don't know if it was gradual, but every time I see one, I'm like, eh, I'm not really, I don't really need to follow that.
Wow. You're
and
saying we
so
caught
I'm
up.
I'm here for it.
We caught up with Terry.
I think we caught up with Terry. I think it's funny that he specifies that he doesn't want a map instead of just like not putting a map.
Yeah, I think so too.
'Cause he could have just written the just not included a map and not said anything about it.
Yeah. But instead he made
unless
it like...
Do you, unless, do you think this was a... Because this is an old book, right?
Yeah.
Do you think he wrote that forward later after everyone was like, come on, man, where's the map?
Where's the map? could be, but I don't think so. I think it was in the original edition.
Okay.
So yeah, he had to just, cut him off at the pass.
He's predicting. He was like, people are going to want a map. I'm not doing it.
And I'm not endorsing any fan maps. Get them out of here.
Yeah, I support him on that.
Okay. Great. Okay, that's the world though, Luke. Let's.
Yeah.
Can we talk about our Two Flowers character?
Yeah, the tourist guy.
Yes. Two Flowers, the tourist from this very unique land that he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I think this world has the greatest propaganda machine that has ever existed.
This world being the one that Two Flower comes from, or just the whole thing?
I think everywhere else. Okay. I think the amount of information control they're able to exhibit is incredible. Because nobody knows about this place. Sorry.
Yeah.
This place, which has like tons of wealth just like lying around. Like you could go and people would tip you for just like doing a little song for like thousands of dollars, like tens of thousands of dollars for 2 minutes of labor.
Right.
And nobody's heard of it before.
Right. Well, there's hints of it, right?
Yeah. But this is like, if I know about it, just selling the information is valuable, right? If I'm like, hey, I'll take you to a land where they will give you gold for doing nothing. And the other thing about it that's insane, people go there. Like, there is trade back and forth between this place. That's how Two Flower got off of the...
Right.
Like, he took a boat that somebody brought and then left.
Right. Well, Two Flowers... Two Flower? I forget if it's plural or not. like, the way he describes getting here seems really easy.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, you just take a boat for like a week.
Right. And like our wizard guy who gets tasked with like guarding Two Flower, essentially, he poses a great question, which is like, why can't we just go there and bring a bunch of money back? No. That question gets posed to him by the like baron of the city, where he was like, what's going to happen if everybody goes and like gets a bunch of money from there? And wizard guy, who unfortunately I can't remember his name right now. It's been a little while since I finished this section.
Rincewind,
yes. Rincewind is like, we'd all be rich, right? And the baron is just like, you're not getting it. We got to talk about something else. Just... how are they able to do this? They all know about it too. The barons know about it. Like the higher ups, the elites seem to know about it.
Right. I mean, okay. So like, it feels like it's more on the counterweight continent, which is the name of the place that Two Flower comes from.
Yeah.
Because they are much more powerful.
You're saying they're the ones keeping the information suppressed.
Yeah, or like forcing the others to find some way to keep the information suppressed, right?
I see.
I don't know exactly how it's being done, but there's a power imbalance here, like a huge one.
Yeah.
Well, okay, actually, can we back up for a second?
Yeah.
I don't have never been involved in the discourse around this series, so I don't know that much about it, but like it's basically our world, the counterweight continent, right?
Well, no, because Rincewind is like wishing, is like dreaming of a world like ours with science.
Okay, yes, this is true, because there is like the little magic thing.
Yeah. So it's I
can't figure out what's going on here, because like it's, is it supposed to be a, because like he has
insurance, a camera and stuff like that,
and he has
and like, economics, he's talking about economics. Yeah. Okay, so here's what I think of it as, right? I think it's more similar to our world, but if it was magic instead of science that was doing stuff.
Okay.
Because yeah, he's talking about economics, which took me so long to figure out the resounding sound made by a dead person or whatever the like transliteration was, which it's, I mean, we're getting a little bit off topic here, but it's giving like the Orconomics sort of a vibe to me, which is really interesting. But I think it's similar to our world in a lot of ways, but also it's like magic. It's if our world was magic instead of science.
Sure. Anyway, to bring us back, I don't know how exactly it's done, but somehow they don't know about it. Do you have a good image in your mind? I know he said he's not going to include maps, but how the counterweight works.
I'm just picturing like a big ocean.
Yeah.
Like there's a big ocean and like some land. I guess I'm picturing like a disc that has like a big part of it that's land, and then like a quarter of it that's mostly ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a big island out there that's really heavy.
Sure.
It's mostly gold. That's what I'm picturing right now. Although I don't remember if they said that the whole world was ringed by water.
I don't know.
I can't remember either.
I think you're right, though. I think you're right. Okay. But so speaking of these two continents, I guess we should call them, having more contact.
Yeah.
So Two Flower gets there and is doing his thing.
Yeah.
And the leader of the city hears from them, and they want them to protect Two Flower.
Yeah.
At first.
right.
And so the leader of the city is like, okay, if something bad happens to him, this other continent has so much power that, like, if they get mad, they can just, like, wreck us with no effort to them.
Yeah.
And so Rincewind, I need you to protect Two Flower.
Yeah.
I feel like assign more resources to this project. Right?
You're saying this is a you problem, not a Rincewind problem.
Well, it's like, yeah, it definitely is. But also, if it's important, like, don't just be like, all right, where now that this buffoon of a failed wizard is on the case, I can wash my hands of it.
Well, but I feel like that is sort of the vibe, is that he can just put blame on somebody else. It's classic, like, government finding a scapegoat and being like, all I have to do is say that I put this famous wizard on the case, and then if something happens, I can blame him for it.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, you don't actually care about the consequence. You care about the assignment of blame.
Exactly. You need to figure out who can be responsible for it.
Sure. Yeah.
And clearly the continent that Two Flower came from is in chaos right now.
Right.
So, I don't know. Who's gonna check?
So you said the famous wizard, Rincewind.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time figuring out, like, who is famous and why people are famous. Because I agree with you that a lot of people seem to know Rincewind.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why, considering he doesn't seem to be anyone of particular importance.
Can you remind me, did Bravd and Weasel recognize Rincewind, or did he recognize them?
Ooh. I think they recognized him.
I thought they did as well. Maybe, okay, I get the sense that this world is really small.
Okay, I have a note here that this world feels both really small and then at times really large.
Yeah. So this, I think the smallness comes from the fact that there's these heroes we hear about that all make an appearance.
Right.
Which to me seems like it's pretty small. When does it feel big to you?
Like when a lot of the just like descriptions of things, mm-hmm. that like they fought dragons over here, mm-hmm. and like did these other things over here. More on the kind of abstract descriptions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then when we actually like talk about people, like, yeah, they see each other, all these like heroes, and they're not like, oh, I haven't seen you in forever. What a shock to see you here. It's like, oh, yeah. There's Greg. I saw him last week or something.
He's my fantasy league.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely agree. I think it as that happens more and more, it makes it feel like those big, where Terry is saying how big the place is, makes it feel like it's actually a lot smaller than it is. Like, the longer this book goes on, the more I'm like, okay, so you could ride a horse across it in like 2 days.
Yeah, I feel that way too.
Okay, well, maybe the disc is small. I mean, elephants aren't that big, Luke.
They're actually normal sized elephants.
They're normal sized, yeah. I sort of have a question about Two Flower.
Okay.
When he gets off the boat, They mentioned that he has four eyes.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. See? Now, here's the thing. And here's my question about it. Because everybody forgets about it, seemingly. Because when he first steps off the boat, that's like one of the distinguishing features is they're like, this guy has four eyes. That's crazy. And then people kind of stop commenting on it. People who just meet him for the first time don't say anything about it. And it makes me wonder, is he wearing glasses? Is that the four eyes thing?
I was thinking, I was going to ask if this is a glasses joke.
But like...
or something.
That's... who would mistake those for eyes? Do you understand what I mean? Who is looking at glasses and being like, wow, you've got four eyeballs?
Right, like the four eyes thing as a way to make fun of someone wearing glasses. Like, that's a thing.
Right, but nobody's thinking that you have four eyes. It's never been the case.
Where, yeah.
I don't think. I hope not.
I don't think so either. But that's got to be it, right?
I think based on how characters stop reacting to the fact that he has four eyes, like it has to just be glasses. Because otherwise, this is what I'm talking about with everybody the first time I meet them.
Well, yeah. Well, also, this was described to us from the perspective of, I forget his name, but he was like a...
the beggar.
A street beggar,
yeah,
kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget if he was like a drunk or anything like that, but...
yeah, maybe. But then, like, I feel like everybody would have four eyes. Like, he'd be saying that about everybody.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know.
I feel like this must be the case because I do think it's a glasses reference that they just must not have glasses here. And that's the point of this kind of joke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where it's, yeah, I don't know. That's my guess.
Man.
It didn't land particularly well for me. But.
No, unless he like literally had four eyeballs in his head, and then I'm like, okay, now I'm interested. Tell me more.
Right, but we refuse. Yeah. Maps and four eyes, Terry refuses to elaborate further.
Yeah,
upon.
Won't do it.
What do you think about this this walking chest thing?
I'm
kind of having a hard time figuring out what's going on with it. Well, in terms of the like really powerful magic that that Rincewind describes as being associated with it.
I think he's talking about the pear wood, the like special pear wood that it's made out of.
Right.
Right.
But when he meets the two heroes, I forget their names, but
Bravd and Weasel. Yep,
Bravd and Weasel. He's like, don't go anywhere near this because it has this weird effect. And he like, I forget what exactly he says, but it's a really abstract description of it.
It's not related to
the wood.
He was saying that about Two Flower, I believe, and he was saying that chaos is attracted to him like a guy standing up on a tall hill during a thunderstorm, cursing the gods or whatever.
Well, there is that, but then he describes he's when he's telling them to stay away from the chest, I feel like he says there's, if you touch it, there's some kind of
magical effect.
But his description of it was really abstract, and I was like, I haven't really seen that part of it. It seems like more just it's always walking around really fast.
And chomping at people.
And making chomps at people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't remember the specific magical effect that he said there.
Yeah.
Maybe he was bluffing.
Maybe.
Maybe. Because yeah, I don't know what the I don't recall what that was.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a cool chest. Got a lot of legs.
It is a cool chest. It's necessary, though, Luke. Do you remember, Luke, how much gold he brought with him?
was it like 2000?
Oh yeah, Luke. Like, are you ready for Dan Does the Math?
Oh yes, please.
Okay. All right, Luke. Because we need to talk about how much this gold weighs, because there is no way he's transporting it without a chest that moves on its own. Okay? So.
Okay.
He talks about it like being the size of his hand, right? Each one of these things.
Oh, does he? Okay,
I think sure. He talks about them as big. They're like around the same size as like the palm of his hand. Okay?
Okay. Sure.
Okay, so that's like the... That's like the diameter is like the palm of his hand. Let's say, let's try and get to like a liter of volume, because that's going to work easier for me, right? Is to go from volume to density, or like volume, okay. Density, mass, right? Okay. So I'm going to say if you stacked up these coins, if they're the size of your palm, I'm going to say if you stacked maybe like 20, you get to a liter. Does that seem right? Is that too many?
Let me see. So I feel like they're probably, let's call them, I feel like they're like half a centimeter thick.
Ooh, pretty thin. If they're gold, if they're solid gold, Luke, they have to be.
They've got to be pretty thick.
Kind of thick. Otherwise they get bent. Yeah. Yeah.
You want to go centimeter?
Let's say a centimeter thick. Yeah. Yeah.
Centimeter thick, size of your palm.
Maybe between 15 and 20, I'm saying.
I think that's a reasonable.
Is going to get to a liter. And let's say...
I would say less than 20, but...
Let's say just for argument's sake, 20 is a reasonable amount. Like 20 will definitely get it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So 20 gets you to a liter. So that means there are... And this makes the math easier too, right? Because he's got 2,000 of them.
Yeah.
So we've got 100 liters of gold here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. 100 liters of gold. Now, how much does a liter of water weigh, Luke? A kilogram.
1 kilogram, obviously.
Okay, okay. Gold, a lot denser than water. I will say.
With that specific gravity.
I will say, Luke, this I did look up before we started. Okay? Gold is 20 times... the density of water.
Okay.
So we're looking at literally a ton. This is 2,000. No, 2 tons. This is 2,000 kilograms.
2,000 kilograms. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
This is 2,000 kilograms of gold that he's carrying around.
Yeah. That's the... Okay, so it's about the weight of a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Put this chest to work. What are we doing?
Man, this thing's powerful.
This has got a Hemi in there. This trunk's got
what's
a Hemi.
What's the horsepower on this bad boy?
Get this thing moving rocks or something. I don't know. Build a pyramid.
Get this thing moving rocks, folks.
Why is it transporting? What you need a line of credit. Buddy, you don't need to carry 2,000 gold pieces around with you.
This is why we created paper money.
It's silly. Put it in a bank somewhere. Get this chest moving rocks.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think it's crazy that he didn't do research on the conversion? On the currency conversion ratio?
I mean, yeah, it is crazy, Luke. But I don't think that the information was available to him. Like, I think he's doing the research, right?
Yeah. I know we kind of already talked about this. It's unclear to me what information is crossing between these two continents, because he is getting a lot of information.
He's right. He does have a little book with phrases in it. That's true.
Well, and he's like up to date on the current heroes.
Oh, that's true too. Well, unless, okay, Luke, hold on. Maybe inflation has run rampant. And the heroes are all really old.
Okay.
Maybe this is a legend situation, not with the creepy like misogyny part, but more of the like old heroes at the end of their time part.
Okay.
Like Hrun and Bravd and Weasel are all like 90. And and that's the last time he got intel about them.
Sure.
And so back then, gold was like really prevalent and everything. But then inflation went crazy, maybe, I guess, on his continent, right?
On his continent. Okay.
Yeah. So inflation just went bananas. I was going to say,
it'd be the other way around if it was for them.
Yeah. They had a crazy inflation happen.
Right.
Somebody opened up a new gold mine or something. And
well, their continent is kind of made of gold. Not almost.
Right. So yeah, the exchange rate just is chaos at that point.
It's chaotic. It's moving up and down, yeah, for sure. Okay.
Maybe they've recently invested in crypto.
Sure.
And so maybe their economy is more crypto-based.
Well, I also think this kind of seems like the first time that tourism was invented.
There's a lot of new inventions here happening, actually.
Yeah. because like even if you didn't know, like, okay, he's obviously the first one to come from their continent, at least in a really long time.
Yeah.
Now presumably within the main continent that we're talking about, people are doing some tourism, mm-hmm. or something like that,
mm-hmm.
so maybe, I don't know, maybe tourism hasn't been a thing in the counterweight place, and so he's like doesn't really know what to look out for, because I would think even if I didn't know the exchange rate before I left, first thing I'm doing, I'm like, hey, how much is this worth actually?
Hey, be real with me right now, be really real, what would you do for one of these? What's the craziest thing you
it's
would
like
do
one
for
of the
one
first
of
things. That's one of the, I'm thinking, I'm planning ahead and being like, how can I get real information about how much money I have?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but Luke, if this is the invention of tourism, right? Mm-hmm. You're assuming that your money is the same everywhere, right?
Ooh.
You're going to, because that's what he does. He's like, oh, that's about, this service would cost about this much. And so he just pays what it would be in his place.
That is what he's doing, I think.
Granted, like a society that had developed economics should probably know better, but
he's kind of a dummy though.
Yeah. I mean, he's an insurance guy. He's like an insurance adjuster.
He should know. He should probably know.
Which I guess like we should address the fact that objectively I think very funny that he like offers an insurance policy to a guy who then immediately goes and burns down his house because he's like, he just doesn't understand like how it works, and the Two Flower doesn't really explain it to him properly.
Right.
Kind of love that. We do need to go into the second chapter though.
Okay. The Cinder of Eight or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I want to talk about Hrun, the barbarian hero who they encounter in the temple with them.
Okay.
So this dude has never encountered like a mimic chest before, because he's running around like looting everything immediately.
Yeah.
There's like he has zero qualm about anything. He's just like running in and stabbing and collecting and just like doing whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Come on, guy. There's chests. There's got to be chests out here. There's literally a chest right in front of you that like bites people's arms off.
Honestly, this whole time I've been thinking of a mimic chest for this one. But to your point, he's pretty loosey-goosey.
I'm amazed he's made it this far.
Yeah. Especially because, like, they do this thing, and they... I'll say they win this encounter too easily.
Yeah.
Where they like defeat the like great demon of this world with like a flash of light.
Right. With a yeah. Yeah.
And then they treat the encounter as over. And he starts like lifting up the lid of the sarcophagus and stuff like that.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's like, and he's saying that's where the treasure always is. In my experience, that's usually where the boss is.
Correct. You open the sarcophagus and the mummy lord comes out and you have to fight phase two.
Right. Like my assumption would have been like, okay, that was the guard. Now when I do this thing, it'll kickstart the real boss battle.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, of course. Or it's trapped, like it's definitely booby trapped. Yeah. And
you open it and the bars on the doors come down.
Yes.
And it's a new encounter.
A mummy lord rises. Yes, exactly. And was like, ha, ah, you see, you've dealt with my pet. time to show you who's boss around here.
But he says this like super matter of factly.
I mean, he would know better than we would, Luke.
It's a different world, Dan, I guess.
Yeah.
It just shows the difference between...
that or apparently his god is like really rolling hot for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's good for him.
Yeah. Enjoy it, I guess.
I have a small note, but we hear... It's kind of like an aside about the world in general, about discarded mage books.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about these.
Where they're kind of like the nuclear waste
mm-hmm.
of our world.
Yeah.
But to an extreme degree.
Mm-hmm.
Where like there's not really a safe way to dispose of them. And what they've done before is... if possible, throw them off the edge.
Yep.
Or if you can't do that, they like try to bury them or stuff like that. But always, you know, that causes complications, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And the complications that they describe, I kind of forget the exact details, but like seem like some things that you could harness the power of a little bit.
Some of the complications are like mutant fish, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do something with these.
Luke, you're trying to you're trying to inject some science into this world, I think.
I'm trying to upcycle.
Okay. You're saying we
and
don't need to
inject some science, yes.
Yeah, of course. But you're saying we don't need to throw these away. We need to figure out how to use them for a purpose.
Yeah. They're like leaking magic.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, we can find a use for that for sure.
Especially considering how hard magic is to use in this world, because this is where the law of conservation of reality gets introduced, where it's this idea that when you use magic, it takes like an equivalent amount of time to use the magic as it would to like do the thing without magic.
Mm-hmm.
Which
it basically renders magic useless.
Yeah, I'm like, from this perspective, I'm like, okay, this sucks. Who would do this? Just get good at guitar, okay? That's all you need to do.
right.
But the cheat code here, Luke, is the grimoires that people can make.
Right.
Because the grimoire is like real magic that gets put into a book that you can use at a different time, I think. You can like cast it on command. My understanding was other people could cast it too. Is that wrong?
I think so, but I think like they can't once the original wizard dies or something like that.
Okay, great. I think you're right too. Luke, this is a dire reality then, because you know there's grimoire sweatshops somewhere.
That they're just cranking them out, you mean?
Yeah, where I'm like a really wealthy Jeff Bezos type wizard, and I hire a bunch of like interns to scribble down a bunch of cool spells for me, and then I lock them up so they aren't in danger of dying anytime soon. And I'm just running around with a bunch of spells I didn't have to do all the work for. You know what I mean?
Ooh, I see what you mean.
Now I don't have to do the work for this spell. I get somebody else to do it, or 1,000 people to do it. And then I just get the book at the end and can cast like Fireball once at a cool party on my yacht.
This is true. This is a good innovation. Yeah.
Well, no, it's a bad innovation, Luke. It's not good. It's great. We don't want
it. Well, it's an effective innovation, I should say.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Definitely. We need to like be harnessing this power and concentrating it. You know? And like, right, like exploiting the labor of the lower class, of the lower wizard classes.
Try to funnel all the gains of the many into a select few.
Right. As few as possible. And then their lives are so cool.
So, so cool.
Like unimaginably cool.
Yeah. I think that's good. I think that's a good system.
I just feel like it's gotta lead to this sweatshop sort of a situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll end up there for sure. But then but then that really exacerbates the problem of the discarded mage books, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if one of your like sweatshop lackeys dies of like poor working conditions or something, then you don't want a fireball leaking out at a bad time.
Right. Right. The magic is weird in this book so far.
Yes, it's very weird. It seems to intentionally defy science and logic,
mm-hmm.
much to Rincewind's chagrin. Cool. Okay. Luke, I've got one more thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
Do you think that the camera is black and white from now on? Or do you think that Two Flower brought spare magenta or pink or whatever the color was that they ran out of?
Ooh.
Because they, at a certain point, they tell Rincewind that they're only doing monochrome because they've run out of pink.
Right.
And I just can't imagine if you're going to a foreign country, you're bringing like a bunch of ink, like different ink pots with you.
Yeah, but if you're Two Flower and you're really into the pictures, I feel like he probably planned for
that. And I guess I hadn't thought about the fact that if you've got a chest that can carry 2 tons worth of gold, what's a couple extra vials of cyan or magenta ink thrown in there?
Right. So I'm going to say he has plenty.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay. He just reloaded him and then he's back in business.
Because this one's easier to plan for than the currency thing.
That's true. But you're not ever like filling up again. I doubt you're able to fill up again.
No, for sure not. You're what you brought with you is what you get.
Yeah.
But I feel like he was like, all right, I'm going to be there, you know, for this long, probably take this many pictures a day.
Mm-hmm.
Each picture takes this much ink. I got to have this much really easy stuff that I feel like he's probably planned for.
Yeah. I think you're right, Luke. I think you're right. Okay. Fair enough. So he's back in color, back in full color now.
Right.
Which is great.
Impressive little camera
mm-hmm.
he's got going on.
A little guy inside. A little snarky guy. A little actually very useful guy. Guy who seems to give a lot of helpful information.
Yeah, actually better like not just a camera.
Wow. That's their kinda Luke, guy. You should be their marketing department. Not just a camera. Wow, okay.
That's right.
Tell me more.
A little buddy.
Where can I buy one?
That helps you along. Well,
oh boy,
can't really buy people here in this one.
Well, it's a demon, so
oh yeah, it is a demon, that's right.
Okay, well Luke, we've got 2 more chapters in The Color of Magic.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna finish it up for next week. We'll find out what's going on with our little guy in the camera.
Yeah, I want to learn more.
see how he's doing. And we'll be back next week bringing hot takes
and being dumb nerds.